Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Far Away From Today, and it's about an exciting new collection of songs available on Until the Quasar cassettes. And our guest for this episode, no conflict of interest here, by the way, none. At all. None. Our guest for this episode is someone who knows something about this exciting new batch of songs, Mr. John Charney, who is, of course, the composer and performer of Far Away From Today. Welcome back to the podcast, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We're in a new location, aren't we?
Yes, we're not in the cemetery, but this has electricity and a roof.
It does, and we can easily use the electricity to help pay the bills that were incurred from past debts that are incumbent upon the locale, maybe.
Maybe, yes. So, yes.
Anyways.
We're in a gazebo, let's face it. It's a gazebo. We're in a gazebo. Out in nature, where there's trucks and birds and wind and whatever, and the microphone is set to omnidirectional, gain 100%. So this is going to be an interesting sounding podcast, I think.
Especially if either one of us farts.
Exactly, exactly.
I did before.
Yes. Now, I will say, previous podcast episode, we did get a feral cat being trapped once on
what?
A podcast, yes.
Where?
My front porch.
I was expecting the wilds of West Virginia.
No, it was Greenfield.
The wilds of Greenfield.
The wilds of the Greenfield. It was a wild place. But anyway, we're already off topic. We haven't even started yet.
We're buds. That's what we do.
This is what we do. So this is going to be a rambling podcast. Far Away From Today. Let's talk about Far Away From Today. What is Far Away From Today? How do you describe... Let's start with the existential question, and we'll dial it in from there. How about that?
Far Away From Today, I think more as a concept for me, is just basically living different lives within a life. And, you know, that idea of something being so long ago, yet it seems like it's right around the corner, depending on how you feel at any given moment. But it, like I said, it seems like a lifetime away. The actual premise was based upon a song that I wrote that's about the times I spent with my dad. And it just, again, it seems like a lifetime away, all those experiences. He passed away 10 years ago, and we didn't have the closest of relationships. He did his thing. I ended up doing my thing. And it's that idea of distance, whether it's time or nature of relationship, that kind of thing. And to take it a little further, every song on the album is probably 5 years old or more. So they were not recorded very recently. Well, they were written. I mean, not written very recently. They were recorded very, very recently. You know? And I gotta thank you first and foremost for lighting the spark underneath my butt to get this recorded. I mean, like, I probably would have gotten these recorded at some point, but I need deadlines. I have so many songs written, so many riffs written, and I always lament this to you. And something like this has definitely benefited me in that regard, so thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and thank you for thinking that our DIY boutique cassette label was a good idea. Like that's always the thing, you know. I think that's the thing. Me and my partner Murph, who's also been on the podcast some time ago, we're always amazed, like, that other people think this was a good idea. You know, it's just like we decided we would do this, and so then we did it.
Yeah.
And then other people are like, oh yeah, you got a cassette label? Yeah, I'd love to put out a tape because it's the tape. Speaking of things far away from today,
you know, literally.
The ubiquity of the cassette.
I love it. I think it's great. I have so many cassettes.
Me too.
And I never got rid of them.
Me too.
Why get rid of musical media? Why get rid of any kind of media?
I don't know. People are weird.
People are.
Well, okay, we've now opened, I think, a metaphysical door, thinking about Far Away From Today, and this question of what do we do with the past, which I think is an existential question, I think is a question philosophically that I think does inform this collection of songs, does inform whether it is the nostalgia that you know, people go buy cassettes now, and I mean, there's the tour tape phenomenon and all of that. So I'm buying new tapes, and so can you on untilthequasar.bandcamp.com. But anyway, but yeah, it's like this question of, well, what do we do with the past?
I would just say that it depends on the situation. It depends on the item of your past, whether or not it, everything. I mean, you can take this and make it as cheesy as possible. You can say, you know, I'm only defined by my whatever's, you know, like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, yeah. All that kind of thing. I think, speaking for me, I've changed over the years. I used to be a lot more nostalgic. I mean, I still am to mm-hmm. certainly a fault, but not to the fault I used to be. Yeah. But I do think that we are, in a sense, defined by our past. I mean, I don't know how you can get away from that because it's literal. It's self-evident. I mean, like what we are right now is a product of who we've been. Maybe, you know, a product of how we want to be. You know, as far mm-hmm. as like the future may set its course for us. But honestly, like literally, I don't understand how anyone can downplay the importance of one's past and what it means to someone. I was just cleaning out my basement last night in where I live, and chiefly because there was a heavy rainfall lately, and mm-hmm. I have a sump pump that's not automatic, so I've had to run into that basement probably 50 times within the past 2 days because there's been so much rain.
Yeah.
And in that time, I've gotten rid of some things that I really didn't need and that were broken down. And you know, in that idea of hoarding and clinging to the past and, you know, how do you shed it, blah, 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 all those other things. You know, you have to make decisions sometimes. And ultimately, it can be beneficial to let go of certain things and to use certain things from your past. So I don't think I've answered that question one bit.
No, but I think you've made it more complicated, which is delicious. And I'm thinking a couple things. One, the lovely coup.
And you had a glasses change just now, by the way.
I
just
did.
So everybody knows.
It's dusk. It is officially dusk in my mind.
Okay.
Sunglasses are off.
All right.
For you, keeping score at home, sunglasses off. That's SE3.
They deserve to know.
On your score sheet. It was recently Father's Day, which was actually also happened to be the day after the anniversary of my father passing away, which is always amazing. Some years it's the same day.
Yeah.
But Turner Classic Movies had the greatest coup of all, because on Father's Day, they showed Death of a Salesman, the 1985 Dustin Hoffman, Charles Durning, John Malkovich version of Death of a Salesman. And modern American drama is about being haunted by the past. You know, it's about the past needs blood donors. You know, which is a phrase from Ellen Diamond, and she says literally, if you're doing modern American drama, you are literally donating your blood and your body to embodying a script from the past.
Mm-hmm.
But also, she said, you know, the way that there are these sort of haunted houses of modernity, that, you know, a lot of those plays were about how we can't get away from the past. And certainly Death of a Salesman is a wonderful example in the Willie Loman character in the saga of the Loman family of not being able to get away from the past. And it becomes this utterly toxic, cancerous thing. So that's one thing I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
The other I'm thinking about, and actually saying that in the shadow of a theater where I actually performed on stage many times. Actually, I'm looking at the back of the stage right now from this gazebo.
Soyons vulgaire.
Soyons vulgaire. Let us be vulgar. that's what it means.
I figured.
Yes, let us be vulgar. Was the banner that hung in the theater.
As I know, because I've done work there as well.
Yes.
Not acted, however, yeah, but just play guitar.
The other part about it is, well, three things. Second, we are here on a college campus, if you haven't figured that out by now. Some of you who know both of us personally will know what college campus that is. It was... Actually, this was a conversation I was having on the ride up here to this college campus. I was one of those students who, at 18 years old, came to this campus and saw this as a chance for a radical reboot. as in I'm throwing everywhere, everything away. I came to a place that no one, and I went to high school, even knows where it is. You know, I knew no one here.
Mm-hmm.
I literally, when that minivan pulled away and I was...
On your own.
I was literally on my own. I mean, yeah. That was it. And I wanted that radical break from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, okay, this is a rural campus, and we are in rural America, and we are in a very rural state in rural America. And then the other part about it is, let's face it, we're also maybe in an area that barely has a present.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the past is very important here because also we barely have a present.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least some places barely have a present.
We don't have to get presents anymore, do we?
No. No, and the future ain't what it used to be.
Right.
Though you are listening to a podcast through something called the internet. Yeah. That is quite spectacular.
Yeah. So is Until the Quasar Records.
Yes. And our bulk tape duplicator that was bought out of a church basement in Florida on eBay.
Yes.
That, by the way, folks, if you want to start a micro cassette boutique label, go to eBay.com and look for a Sony CCP 1400, or is it 1300? CCP 1300 tape duplicator. You too. That's it. That's the point of entry.
Yeah. Public service announcement there.
Yes. It's about $200 with shipping is a good deal on that.
Right on. Now I know.
And then you own a cassette label. That's it. That is it. Then you just search for content. And again, thankfully, some suckers come along who think, you know, I'll release my music that way is a good idea.
Like me.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
So that just makes the question, I think, more complicated.
Yeah. I don't think it's an answerable question. Some questions weren't meant to be answered.
I think sometimes, but I think, well... I'll flip it around then. I think, but it is it's a question, but it also, is it a heuristic? And a heuristic is a question we ask to create knowledge.
Okay.
And I think the way in which whatever avenue that you take to this very existential question, what do you do with the past? I think it answers something. I think you can learn something about yourself, and I think you can learn some people can learn something about themselves. And also, I guess, how they want to live life?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to lock in a little more here.
It is complicated, yeah. And I think there are these different channels for, you know, a past that can be a burden, as it is in Death of a Salesman.
Mm-hmm.
I think a past can be as, here we are alumni on a campus, where we are alumni, a place to... reaffirm who we are.
It can also be a codependency.
It can also be a tremendous codependency.
For me personally, the first traumatic thing in my life was whenever I was 9 years old and we moved from this apartment, which was very unremarkable, but at the same time, like, I had my jam. I mean, like, it was set, and I had my Kiss records, I had my Kiss 8-tracks, and I had my coloring books, and I had Dracula, I had the Joker, I had all those pop culture things that I loved so much, and everything was neat and right there, man, and everything made sense.
This is your world. You had a world.
Yeah, and that does not mean that I wasn't without traumatic incidents then, too, like, at that time. There was a time whenever the neighborhood kids, like, totally ganged up? Is that
it? Ganged up, yeah, okay. That's a word.
Ganged up on me.
It's a perfectly cromulent word, yes.
Yeah, and they kind of, I don't know if they beat the crap out of me, but I remember there being spitting and all that kind of thing. So, but I don't really, I look at those days really fondly, and then I guess the flip side of that would be, like, I had two best friends in the neighborhood, and we were discussing Kiss, my favorite band, and I got so mad, like, they were just, like totally dissing on them, like, panning Kiss all the way, and I just looked at the one and punched him right in the face. And all I remember is his face, like, his eyes were, like, gigantic, and he was holding his nose like this. And now we're friends on Facebook. So.
Which, I will say, as an older person, Facebook was amazing, at least... for a way, because that was the other thing. I haven't been back to the town I grew up in since 2000.
Okay.
You know, I cut ties. Most of my friends actually from the town left.
right?
Anyway, and you know, of course, I left this college, you know, and I left grad school, and I left, and so it was this amazing tool for finding out what happened to people.
Yeah,
yeah, and especially for me, people from quote home or high school or whatever, and wow,
it can be awesome.
It can be awesome.
It can be really bad.
It was both. There have been purges.
Facebook. Phasing them out.
Yes.
You like that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
That's how we do.
You start with unfollow, then you go to acquaintance, not friend, and then just generally it's like they just fade away.
And they become wankers.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a way that the past can definitely haunt us, right?
Sure.
But again, I here we are in this place that was, I think, a very important place probably for both of us. I mean, this is certainly for me where I feel like my adult life began, or maybe where my life began, period.
So you had this cathartic thing with this place, and mine was just a continuation of who I was. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're such good
friends.
Well,
you grew up how many miles from here?
Well, 10 miles, maybe. Is it 6 miles? 10 miles? It's 10 miles from
10
here.
10 miles
ish. It's like 15-minute drive from here, and
300 miles for me. It was 300 miles.
Right. So yeah, it's a little different.
and I mean, again, you know, it was also a completely different culture. I mean, it was a culture shock coming here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being able to get into New York City in about 20 minutes.
You were that close.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
What was the town again, if you
South
don't mind this
Plainfield.
Close? South Plainfield.
Now, when
wait
I mean
a minute.
20
my
minutes.
Mom's friend, one of my mom's best friends is from South Plainfield. I'll have to mention
Lord.
That to her.
Oh, dear Lord.
Wow.
But, you know, it's Staten Island you get to in 20 minutes, but still.
Yeah, yeah.
No traffic.
Right.
4 a.m, 20 minutes, you're in Staten Island.
You can get a ferry to the city.
Yeah.
How long's the ferry to the city?
Not long.
Yeah.
Not long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds pretty fun then.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Anyways.
You could get a good sub back then.
You get a good sub and excellent pizza. Premier League pizza.
Yeah. And I know you are a huge pizza snob, so, you know, that has a lot to do with that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That is something from my past that I've held on to. That's the one thing that I make. And I will say, I looked up the website a couple months ago of the pizza shop that I like. And A, their Facebook had pro-Trump stuff on it, which kind of was lame. And then B, the pies look different.
Hmm. Do you think that's a coincidence?
It might be.
They do.
It might be. It's just a sign of, you know, American decay. The
Some
pies
more,
aren't what they are. And
more conservative slices than.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, basically, yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, actually, almost weirdly, probably trying for some sort of old world thing, which is a, you know, so maybe it is kind of this crypto, maybe the pizza slice is now this crypto white nationalist thing.
Ew. Oh, wow. You pay for it with Bitcoin, too, I bet, because you said crypto.
Crypto.
And if you don't, you die, you end up in a crypt.
Yes.
Or if you end up in a gang, you're a crip.
Yes.
Woo. We are way off topic now.
We are way off topic.
There's somebody walking another dog up there. All right.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I saw it and it looked like my dog. I was like, what'd you do with my dog, man? How'd
See,
you
now, know? Isn't that the part of the charm like these, though? Like when we would do the graveyard, the first edition, it was raining and we had a makeshift umbrella over your equipment and it was thundering.
And we were under a big tree and yeah.
Yeah, you know, and now we're like covered and there's people walking their dogs and it's so idyllic.
And it looks
so
like
beautiful.
My dog, and I had this moment of like, do I go kill that guy because he stole my dog? And
I would have been right there with you, man.
And, yeah.
That's Spuds McKenzie up there, though.
Yes, that dog does look like Spuds McKenzie.
From 300 yards away.
Yes.
But anyways. Yeah.
The past. What do we do with the past? Well, okay. Let's just avoid that question maybe for a little bit. We'll get back to it, but so what does this song, what does this music sound like? What's your thing, actually? That would maybe be a good, for the record-buying public, and yeah, there's going to be some songs in this coming up here in a second, but for the record-buying public, what does this sound like?
Well, when you commissioned this album,
yes.
We had talked about, hey, how about a solo album? Because I've been playing solo acoustic for about almost 20 years out of necessity. I was in a band, Honey Bomb, back in the day.
Yes.
And it broke up, and I played music for a living, quote-unquote, take that as you will, And
well, you do. You pull it off. You do not have the day job, really. No, it's all strings.
So yeah, that's a good thing. I like that. That's good. It's all strings. That might be a future album title. Yeah. But no, back then, I mean, I did it out of necessity, and I really did not know how to sing, and I had to kind of teach myself how to sing. And since then, I mean, I've written songs, of course. I've written tons of songs. But I've never recorded a solo album. So when you mentioned that idea, that was very appealing to me. And I knew that I'd have enough songs that would be conducive to that. So essentially what this is a collection of songs that are all acoustic solo. But there are overdubs. There are some songs that have electric overdubs that kind of fit the repetitive nature of the song, because there was just sort of a rolling sort of riff that kept... you know, repeating itself, not really like a 12-bar blues, but the same progression, essentially. And I figured that would be appropriate. And then there's some overdubbed vocals at times, but it's all me. There's no other musicians on the album, so it truly is solo, but with just like overdubs and whatnot. And like I said, it constitutes a bit of a, you know, cleaning up my musical closet, my house, you know what I mean, getting things in order. And just getting those things recorded finally, you know, whichever would have been good for this. And just one more thing I'll say is it goes between vocals and like sort of 6-string, 12-string, you know, acoustic guitar, and then classical guitar, like nylon string. And there's actually some sitar in it too.
Really? I did not know there would be sitar. I did not commission sitar.
Hey, well, should I remove it?
No, of course not. But
So yeah, that's the long and short of it. Sort of, the theme behind it, musically, lyrically, it's kind of just two songs that have lyrics. It's nine songs that are, we have seven original songs that are instrumental and two that have vocals, and then there are two hidden tracks. So, but there are only two vocal tracks. So,
And so actually, I think you opened up a back door of answering our previous existential question, because so what does it mean to record these songs? And cleaning up the past to you?
The most extreme example is a song entitled 1991 that was literally a jam in 1991 off of a riff between myself and Dominic Peruso, who is my longtime musical collaborator. He's a drummer. We've been playing together since probably, I think, senior year of high school, 1989, 1990-ish. And his dad actually worked in that building to my left.
Yeah.
Sayo, baby.
I worked for him, actually, one summer. Yes,
so was it terrible?
No, it was great. It was a great summer job.
No, we loved Dom Sr. So,
yeah, it was the best summer job I could have had, I think.
Let's put it this way. If it wasn't for Dom Sr.'s basement, I would probably not be doing music for a living.
Really?
Yeah, because that's where the genesis momentum of it all, other than like my own bedroom in Carrolltown, you know, like jamming with Dom in the basement. But anyways...
So with Dom, you were in, or are in, Wine of Nails. Is that still a thing?
It is still a thing, and we are actually doing a cover band now called Saturn Plan. Two words, like the planet, but plan. Saturn Plan. And basically right now, we are doing that. We're focusing on getting some shows with that. Might be doing NOLA in Market Square.
Oh, fantastic.
So we'll see what happens. We just did a demo at Tree Lady Studios in Pittsburgh. And
that's right.
Went really well.
Great.
And we may have another Wine of Nails album coming out in the fall-ish or winter. Like maybe we'll start recording it then, because it takes me a while to get albums finished, obviously.
Yes, that's okay. You're no My Bloody Valentine, though. That's the thing. I mean, I think that was what...
Who is?
Yeah.
Who could be?
Who could be?
I'm like My Bloody Greeting Card.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think for them it was, 19 years, but... the story is, you know, about Loveless. The dude who ran Creation Records literally called every day.
Wow. Is that like Chinese democracy?
The way Creation worked was each record funded the next record.
Well, I can see why he would do that.
Yes, and so literally called the next, is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? I think the Pitchfork liner notes on that record said that there's a tambourine part in one song that took a week to get right.
That is ridiculous.
Yes.
If Peruso would have been privy or subjected to that type of treatment, I think I'd be dead by now.
That's good.
Because he'd be doing the Tambo parts. Yes. So.
But yeah, and so then the follow-up, 19, they were literally supposedly working on it pretty consistently for 19 years.
Yeah. Well,
it's a great record. That's a great record, too. MBV is a great record.
I mean,
as long as it's good.
I mean, but
as long as it's good.
The problem is this, though. I mean, you, as an artist, you really do have an obligation to create to yourself, first and foremost, because that's the whole aspect of the arts. You know, some like to argue and say that, well, it's only as good as how many people hear it. It's only like how popular, how many people you reach, blah, blah, blah. But I honestly believe, like, just if you want to talk as existentially about that, if this falls into that category, I mean, how good is the universe if its people are happy and if the artist is happy?
Yeah.
You know, that can filter to other aspects of society without being quote unquote big or doing something that's not indigenous to your artistic nature. So I think that's why I'm trying to get this stuff more completed before I kick. So, I mean.
Yeah. Death is a thing.
It is.
Death is the thing. Death makes you also aware of the past, yes.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll become part of it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you can be a part of its future as well, depending on the legacy.
Which is why it's recorded.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. And so many pictures these days. Pictures. There's so many pictures everywhere. It's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is this visual revolution that we're
That's a good way to put it.
Through, you know.
It's like a war.
Fascinating to me, I think. Now, but here's the scary part. Here is the absolute scary part, is archivists are actually tremendously worried about our digital future.
How come?
Because a digital archive, to maintain it, takes electricity, constant vigilance, and strategies against voiding what is called bit rot.
Okay.
So bit rot is like basically cancerous rust of data.
Okay.
And once it gets started, it cannot be halted. And they fear that we might have this tremendous record, you know, of film and pictures and recordings on vinyl specifically. And then sometime in the late 90s, that record might suddenly go away and might go away very quickly in our future. So if you copyright, say, these songs, since you'll maintain copyright, if you copyright them with the Library of Congress, what they will do with them is use a lathe and cut those songs into a vinyl record.
Okay.
Because vinyl is technically forever. All it has to be is kept vertical, not packed tightly, and away from heat. To keep a picture forever, you need acid-free paper and a dry shoebox.
Okay.
Theoretically.
So I know where you're going
with
this.
And so it can stay for hundreds of years.
But you can keep moving the digital media from hard drive to hard drive.
You can, but again, the sheer amount of data that we're creating. I mean, I think it's, what is it, an hour of content gets uploaded to YouTube every minute? Or every second or something like that? I mean, there's some kind of, I don't know the exact, but I mean, it's insane. It is insane. I mean,
that is insane.
I'm making music videos. I'm making podcasts that are going to be out there in the world. How many podcasts exist?
Yeah, speaking of pictures.
All of that.
Speaking of pictures, I mean, that's just gorgeous. Look at that right there.
Yeah, the sun's out. I'm blind. I switched sunglasses. I switched out of sun. It's no longer dusk. Yeah. It is now.
Move it back.
Morning
it back.
Again.
So to avoid this bit rot and the droppage of glasses, you know, what is the combatant? I mean, like, you can keep
media.
You can keep backing up that media. Digital, though. You can keep backing it up.
Yeah, but again, that's tremendous effort, and who's going to do that for 100 years?
So you're meaning after the person passes away, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can't keep
after the
an eye
on. I would even say that you would need to do it, you know, the fear would be, you know, do you do it every 5 years, every 10 years? Again, if you're moving all of that data around, the tremendous effort. Speaking of that, that is a moment when the past becomes a burden.
Wow.
You know, that becomes a form of digital. I mean, you think about it, like, even like GeoCities is gone forever. The original Wild West of dial-up internet and weirdo homemade websites that anybody could have
They're gone.
Is gone.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, some people like kind of archive some stuff, again, digitally. But the whole of it is gone. Like, future academic, future grad students will never be able to write dissertations on GeoCities. It'll be gone. I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, it's almost like you think silent film, 75% of all silent films are lost forever.
Yeah, I know that.
They're gone.
Don't need to hear that, because it really bums me out.
Yeah. Which, actually, if you really want to be bummed out, next time...
Please continue.
If you watch Gone with the Wind, the burning of Atlanta scene, all the pyro in that scene is film. That's what they used film for back when the reels would go out and they would go across the country and back to the, and there was no way of selling old movies at the time.
You've got to be kidding me. These are all originals?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yeah, and it was, you know, in nitrite film, which was...
I used to love that movie.
Incredibly flammable.
Yeah.
And so you had this incredibly flammable, incredibly unstable product. And they were like, well, what do we do? That you couldn't sell, you know?
What in God's name? I mean...
And so then you just put 55-gallon barrels of that film in front of the windows of an abandoned warehouse in Atlanta... And you light it all up, and then that's your scene.
Fire scene. And that's an amazing scene. I mean, that's the way they're able to do that.
So that's probably the final copies of something being gone and erased forever.
Literally gone with the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a lot of Lon Chaney Sr.'s movies, which I've lamented, because there's so many that he's done.
Yeah, Midnight in London.
So many. So many that are like amazing flicks. Just... disintegrated. Gonzo. Oh, there they are. Anyways.
Yeah. But yeah, and that's a thing about the past. I mean, that's also the thing, I guess, you know, why you run a micro boutique cassette label where you, you know...
Cassettes are forever then?
No, but at
records
least...
Records are.
Cassettes will last a bit, provided we don't have any major solar flares or... potentially, if the planet poles ever rapidly reverse, like they might.
Okay.
That might not be good for magnetic medium. but for me, it's also that it's a fairly non-commercial thing. I mean, we're pretty upfront at Intola Quasar that we lose money on every release.
Right.
You know, hopefully you'll be, you know, I'll be paying you initially in cassettes, and hopefully you can then, as you're doing the solo acoustic thing, you can say to the fine folks... And this is one off of this thing that I have on cassette or download.
Or pedal my wares at shows.
Or pedal your wares. You can pedal your wares at shows.
Yeah.
You can say, stop and say, and this next one is off of, you know,
which
this
is off
tape
of-
I got. And I'm sure there's somebody who probably will have an old car with a cassette player. And is like, I want to capture the John Charney magic for the ride home.
That's right. That's a perfect way of saying that.
Yes, and then you just pop it in there. And besides, folks, isn't it about time you saved an old, awesome 80s or 90s car from the junk heap?
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Because
that's the thing. Cars are disposable. You don't. How many Dodge Neons do you see anymore?
Okay, we getting into regular man territory now.
We are getting into regular
car. Sounded like him there for a second.
But, you know, how many, right, these things, they're made, and you love them, and you see them everywhere, and then just one day they just start to slowly disappear. And then you go, wow, I haven't seen a PT Cruiser in forever.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's not right.
Yeah.
How could it be?
It's disposable. It's gone. I mean, that's another thing about being far away from today, the way that we do live in a consumer disposable society as well, that helps drive our, I think, repeated senses of loss. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
I hate the idea of waste in this society. There's so many things that mean a lot to me that have been just discarded like nobody's business in the past because of a businessman that just felt that was the best thing to do. And,
yeah.
You know, God bless him, you know, because it's his. But at the same time, man, you know, your heart gets broken in America if you have a heart, you know?
Yeah, I will say, I mean, that for me, a YouTube hole I fall into quite frequently is the...
Dead
retro
Mall.
Commercials.
Oh, okay.
Well, Dead Mall, Dan Bell, you're awesome. But also, I think I love retro commercials.
Yeah.
There's compilations of them that somebody recorded something off of TV on VHS in whatever day, and people will take the program out and just do the commercial breaks. And it's amazing what industrial capitalism gives us, perhaps sells to us through some sort of emotional appeal, and then also ultimately, I mean, takes away from us. Yeah. Like, do you remember Bonkers? Remember Bonkers?
Yeah, oh, the candy, of course.
Yes!
Of course.
There's no more Bonkers.
It was the tone. The tone was so good with that. There's no more Bonkers.
Yeah.
There's no more Bonkers.
You can't go back.
Are there any Bub's Daddy left, though?
I think so.
We may have seen some at that candy store we went to. What was the name of that joint? Remember we had a malt? Or like an ice cream something?
In the strip. Zeno's, Athro's?
It was an ethnic name, like a German name maybe. Remember? It was like an old style candy store, like almost like a malt shop.
Yeah. What's the name? Zeno's or whatever? It's the one in the strip with the Z name.
Oh, well, whatever.
It was in the old drugstore. It's in the old drugstore.
Yeah, yes. There you go. There you
that
go.
That one.
So, yeah, I mean, there are candies.
I don't know.
Yeah, there are candies that are definitely obsolete that make me very sad as well.
Candies, so, toys, celebrities, cars.
Those gum cigarettes. Those were so great.
Oh, yeah, the powdered sugar and you could blow on
them. Out and it looked like you were smoking. It's good for the kids.
It's good for the kids because let's face it, smoking does make you look kind of cool.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of.
Please. I mean, like everybody in Reservoir Dogs was smoking, please.
Yes.
So.
Which, that's an interesting thought in terms of far away from today, because you think, again, Tarantino is someone who takes the past and makes something out of it. I mean, he only works now in genre. He made this really fascinating historical turn.
And he destroyed an 1890s era Martin guitar, so there he destroyed some of the past, too.
Yeah, so I think that was an accident.
I don't know. Whatever. Either way, it was a huge oversight. Me being a guitar player in a Martin antique. Moving on. Sorry.
Yeah, moving on.
Hey.
But, I mean, you think about what he does. I mean, he does, in some ways, it's a reclaiming of the past. And it's a counterfactual history. Whether it's, you know, those early movies like Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs, there is a thing that he does with the past. Stylistically, Jackie Brown as being a blaxploitation movie, stylistically.
I like the reinventing the past idea. That's really cool.
And then you think about what he did with Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained in particular, where he makes an attempt at redeeming the past.
Okay.
You know, or like telling this highly stylized, you know, you... At an era when we debate, or at least some people are willing to debate whether or not the good guys won the Civil War, here is this incredible reminder of the brutality of slavery.
Yeah.
And you think Inglourious Basterds, you know, there's only this narrative that the Jews were victims, that they didn't resist and they didn't fight back, which is historically untrue. They did. Mm-hmm. There were underground resistances. There was things that people did. He just... you know, told a different truth. You know, there's actually one critic I found said about, especially Django Unchained, are you factually incorrect but emotionally correct? And that's how she experienced Django Unchained.
That's
cool. Is it emotionally correct even if it's not factually correct?
Right. No, I get that. I like that.
Which is also a thing that, you know, I ask this question a lot of poets on this podcast. Because a lot of people write from experience. Jason Baldinger, who will be on this podcast at some point around the time that this one comes out, because he's got some new collections of poetry coming out. He said to me, you know, his kind of MO of writing is, well, if it's a story I would tell somebody, like, how, what did you do today? If that's it, it can be a poem.
Right on.
And for me, it's like, okay, when you retell that story, do you get it factually correct or emotionally correct or poetically correct?
Yeah.
And are all of those things the same thing?
Right.
If you have to choose, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Which, if we want to go back, ground us back into this album, you know, in terms of maybe stylistically, you know, where do these songs come from as you're writing about history you're writing about, I'm assuming each one of these is kind of maybe, is it a snapshot? Are these songs snapshots of moments?
Yes.
And how do you put a snapshot of a moment to music? How do you make that?
Some of them just are created as a product of just playing. We had mentioned a long time ago, 1991, you know, that was a song that was written 27 years ago in the spring of 1991. And it was simply the matter of Dom and I just jamming. And all of a sudden this riff came to me. It was on the spot. And then he just came in and started playing along. And essentially it just boiled down to those two riffs repeating themselves. So whenever I decided to just record this, I was like, okay, this will work, but it's very repetitive and I really don't want to alter it because I want to stay true to the original song, but yet augment it with the overdubs. So that is a snapshot, I'd say, with a little bit of the retelling of the past with the overdubs, you know, which is really interesting. It's kind of like what you're talking about with Tarantino, like being true to that riff, being true to those riffs, but yet what do they mean to me now? Like, what does this improvised electric guitar mean? And it came off really wistful. Whereas back then, it probably would have come off like, well, I'm really into Rush right now, so I'm writing this riff. It sounds a lot like Rush.
Yeah.
So it kind of brings those two together. And then you have something that's different, like Mankind. There's a song on there that's one of the two songs. What's it?
It's track two.
Track two.
And 1991 is track one. Mankind is track two.
Yeah. So Mankind was written probably 15 years ago. It wasn't really in a direct reaction to anything specifically, but I think the tipping point was whenever the Richland Mall was demolished, and I felt as grave sense of...
remember you took that heart.
Horribly. Horribly. It was a place that meant a lot to me, you know, and a lot of other people. Like we mentioned about the disposable aspect of America. The mall...
Disposable buildings.
Right. You know, and it was to the point where, okay, the mall was defunct at the time, you know, like in 03. That's when they tore it down. But even after it had really lost all its power, you know, all its stores and all that kind of thing, I would go, like, after certain years, I would go for walks around the perimeter and connect with that past because there were so many halcyon days inside that place. Mm. So Mankind is your tried and true, we're really okay with being asses. You know, Mankind is comfy with egg on its face. That's the prevailing line in the song. And honestly, that's my biggest problem with it is we're just comfortable with it. Like, not really that we believe in it. We're comfy with egg on our face. Being a constant embarrassment, you know, with I shouldn't say constant embarrassment. That's a little too general. But just, you know, you know what I'm talking about. You know, just the idea of it's so far flung, and you know that kind of like that song right there was just a reaction, a snapshot type piece. But then kind of like my anger in me about what we do to our society.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that. But again, it's a very general concept. That's why I kind of stalled there for a second.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and I think it is that it's that tough. Again, it is this moral quandary that is also this question of what do we do with the past? And, institutions... But I mean, I think that's one of the things why I think people have maybe such strong feelings towards college campuses is as being not so much necessarily full capitalist enterprises, though some of them are really close.
Yeah.
They hold on to the buildings.
Yeah.
The buildings are still there.
Okay.
You know, you sometimes get new buildings, sometimes you get wild new remodels, but it's a place where people can, you know, old ballparks.
Yeah.
Though, you know, there's not many ballparks left. I think about this, there's not many ballparks left that my dad went to. I mean, I have to at some point go to Wrigley Field.
Yeah,
so I know my dad went to Wrigley, and I'm pretty sure my dad has been to Fenway. But that is, in terms of ballparks in use in the United States of America... that my dad had been to in his lifetime. That's it.
Has he been to Camden Yards?
He did not go to Camden Yards. That was kind of post him wanting. He really liked his armchair.
Right.
He liked his easy chair. He liked his cable package.
I do right now.
There was a time when he went out into the world and saw things and did stuff and traveled for business.
Mm-hmm.
And then he retired. And then he found some couple golf courses he liked and he loved. His TV. And so the idea of driving to Baltimore to see a ball game when you watch on TV and you can switch the channel, like, you know, when it gets boring and watch three other games at once.
Yeah.
That appealed to him more than going to Camden Yards.
Okay,
But Camden Yards, of course, is a place that is retro new.
It is.
It was self-consciously designed to be an old-fashioned ballpark.
That's probably the first of its kind, wasn't it?
That was the beginner, yeah, of this new generation.
The template.
Of let's make ballparks like ballparks were.
Close to the action.
Downtown. Air, urban.
Yeah.
Maybe even fitting their block.
Right.
You know, uh-huh. the dimensions of the field might just fit the way the streets already ran.
That's a great tie into what we're talking about then.
You know, it's like somebody took the past and made a new thing of the form that lives within us.
The reinvention of the past. That's cool. I remember the first time I went to PNC. It was eye-opening. And for the longest time, you know, me being the nostalgic person I usually was or am now, you know, I hated the fact that they tore down Three River Stadium. It destroyed me because, like, I was a Bucco fan in the 70s, Steeler fan. And that was really such a just a absolute badass era for sports. And just, it was like so not commercialized. I mean, like, in the best way to look at it, and I think we've discussed this, was when you look at a game from the 70s, look at the crowd. You know, how many people were wearing Pittsburgh Steelers clothing? You know what I mean? Not everybody. You know, nowadays, like, you go to any sporting event, everybody is wearing something, and it's so commercialized.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, that's the spirit that, you know, that gets you. It's also kind of, like, nationalistic looking.
Yeah, it is weird. Well, you think there's also the people went from they to we when describing their favorite team. That's one of my most hated linguistic turns that have happened in this era.
But let me be devil's advocate.
People say we. They're like, no, you're not hitting.
But wait, let's play devil's advocate.
Didn't put on skates.
Where is the team without the fan, though? They pay the bills.
They pay the bills, but you're still not doing the effort. There's a level of detachment there, I think, that's comfortable for me. And I think which is why also people get so fucking distraught over shit. I mean, it's like
we've had our first F bomb.
Yeah, first F bomb. Well, you know,
I will. Chris,
part
this
of the
moment,
iTunes thing, Pellegrino, of course, is you have to tag explicit if it's going to be explicit. And so there are actually podcasts that are not explicit that are tagged explicit because it's just too much of a pain in the ass to change the tag on the feed. So as far as everything, so you might as well earn the E that does show up.
Or the parental advisory sticker, speaking of the past.
Yes, parental advisory sticker.
Yes.
But you think about that, that's the past, but that was also a reactionary gesture against the present and the
future. Tipper Gore.
Yes, Tipper Gore as the reactionary against the present, against the future, and against the new youth culture.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because that's the other part about it is that there is also a creative impulse of let's make something new, let's make something shocking, let's make something that hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
And see what the fuck happens.
Earn the E.
If those of you folks who have Hulu, I got to watch the amazing Chris Burden documentary called Burden, which was so inspiring.
Yeah.
Because he was...
Explain.
So Chris Burden, who I first found out about on this campus from Mr. Kenny Rosinski, who told me about this, was a performance artist turned sculptor. And he was one of the real pioneers of performance art. And in particular, he was one of the real pioneers of dangerous performance art.
So he influenced G.G. Allen?
It's a very similar vein. Probably Gigi didn't know about Chris Burden, but for instance, Chris Burden's two most famous pieces, one was called Shoot, where he literally had a friend shoot him in the arm with a rifle.
Yeah.
It did not go as expected. It was supposed to graze him, but instead there was an entry and exit wound. And then the other one was he crucified himself to a Volkswagen roof.
So is this after the gun incident?
Same era. I think gun incident came first, crucifixion later.
So, the idea of shooting oneself with a gun and it going awry would lead one to believe that crucifying oneself to a Volkswagen is completely going to work out better.
Yes.
Okay, now
So he did these performance pieces that were incredibly dangerous.
There was a piece. I agree.
He did at a gallery in Chicago that he positioned a piece of glass and laid underneath it for 5 days straight and did not really move.
Broken glass?
No.
Just glass.
Just glass.
Okay, well, that's a little more sensible.
Well, so the piece ended. They didn't know when the piece was going to begin. They didn't know when the piece ended. They didn't know what the piece was. It was a piece of glass, and there was a clock on the wall. And that was it. And it was called The Condemned.
For 5 days.
And he just laid under this piece of glass for 5 days. And they
under the piece of glass.
He was the thing to be displayed, the condemned man. And a doctor was like, actually, if he doesn't drink and pee, uric acid could build up in his body and he could die.
So he didn't actually pee for 5 days?
Yeah, he didn't do
anything. Get out of here.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I am sincerely flabbergasted.
And so one of the gallery owners, to try to save his life, is like, well, what if he dies in the gallery?
I have to pee every 10 minutes.
I know.
Like when you were talking before, I peed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they put, a port of something and a glass of water, a pitcher of water underneath the thing, and that was the end of the piece. Then he got up and walked out and somehow produced a camera and came back in and smashed the clock, and then the piece was over. And people hadn't seen anything like this before, and particularly stuff that was extreme and that scary and that radicalized.
Did they know what they were getting into? Like the museum
people at that
person?
Point, he had a reputation for being. I mean, it was the dude who shot himself,
right? And crucified himself to a Volkswagen.
Yeah, and that was the piece, you know. And they had this crotchety old man, and of course he had a British accent, who was like, but performance art isn't art, it's just this thing that people go to, you know, that fools go to, or whatever, and did not accept it as an art. It does not accept, this documentary came out in 2016, does not accept performance art as an art form because it's not a historical form. It's not sculpture, it's not painting, it's not the true performing arts, since it's not an established thing that he was working in. This guy was making this argument that it was not art because it was this new thing.
So because it's new, it's not art?
That was this guy's argument. That's which terrible, is a bullshit argument.
Terrible argument.
Yeah.
He's probably not a lawyer.
He's probably not a lawyer. No, he was an art critic.
So he's not a lawyer then.
Yeah. But again, what do you do with the past? What do you do maybe with what's new?
What is new?
And what happens if the new replaces the old? That's the other complicated part.
The threat.
That is perhaps the most uncomfortable part about this question. Is what happens then, you know, in order for something new to exist, don't you have to, in many cases, replace the historical, replace the old, replace the nostalgic?
Now, define replace. Do you mean get rid of it? Do you mean burn it?
Sometimes.
Like old CDs or records, you burn them, you destroy them?
Well, I think if you believe in a model of creativity that is progressive, that there can still be an avant-garde, if you believe in the idea of an avant-garde, then yeah, you are leaving stuff behind. You're saying, that's bullshit, that's old. You know?
Yeah.
That's no longer revolutionary.
But you're taking away the choice to go and listen to it again, though. Like, isn't avant-garde about choice? Isn't it art about choice? Freedom?
Well, it is, but I think for people who buy into that aesthetic, and in certain ways, I very much am one of them, it's also you have to say then, yeah, you know, that's been done. It's been done. Mm. So, the thing about the Chris Burden documentary, Burden, is I like it better than... No, I don't like it better than the Kirby Dick documentary about Bob Flanagan called Sick. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where Bob Flanagan, because Bob Flanagan also did extreme things to himself in art galleries. Mm. I mean, his party piece was, you know, driving a nail through his penis.
That's extreme.
That's very extreme, yes. But there's a part where he's ranting because everyone, he said, I'm Mr. Derivative because Chris Burden did it first. And he goes on this whole rant about how he would then get bad reviews because he was doing stuff. Oh, it's like Chris Burden. Mm. Yeah, Chris Burden put nails through his body. Chris Burden, you
but
know,
not
himself.
Through his penis.
But not through his penis.
Yeah. I mean, he just simply didn't pee. You know, yeah. What could be worse? I mean, like the nail through the penis, probably horrible, but not peeing for 5 days.
It's in the documentary. If you watch the Kirby Dick documentary, sick, there is a scene where he does it.
Not peeing for 5 days is probably a more of a spiritual, you know, it's physical, of course, but man, yeah. That's got to be profound. You know, the nail through the penis is probably a lot quicker.
It is quicker. And actually, with the Bob Flanagan thing, this is a diversion, but Bob Flanagan had cystic fibrosis, and he, I think, still holds the record for living the longest without a lung transplant.
How long did he live?
He lived into his 40s, and most people don't make it to 20 with that disease.
Wow.
And some of it is that the thought is that his extreme acts of masochism were ways in which he controlled his pain threshold and was able to fight through and survive. But actually, in the doc, he dies in the documentary. The documentary
film,
not because his final breath, but up to about the day he died, and then his wife took photos. His wife is also an artist of his death and the removal of his corpse from the hospital room, and then changing the sheets and getting the bedroom for the next. Bed ready for the next patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is also an ultimate out with the old, where you literally change the sheets, change the pillows, you know, do the nice little fold over like in a hotel room. And
Next.
Wow. Yeah.
What are we? I mean, like, are we just nothing? Are we nothing?
Can I propose a radical thesis?
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
But here's the other part about it, though. And I've been hiding this forever, and we're almost an hour into this conversation. Seems like a minute. Seems like 56 minutes to be exact. George Santana?
Scott?
No. The British theologian and art critic. That's a career move for people. Theologian and art critic.
But he wasn't a lawyer.
No.
Okay.
Who wrote a book, actually, so he wrote a book that I picked up in a used bookstore in downtown Pittsburgh. And I read the last sentence of it, and it took my breath away.
Just the last sentence?
The last literally took my breath away in a bookstore. And
that's
it
an
said,
awesome
the
effect.
Necessity for destroying that which is beautiful is the deepest curse of all existence.
Wow.
He also has this essay called Cloud Castles. And what he says is, he begins by saying, it would be bad philosophy to condemn birds for their ability to fly, or to condemn fish for their propensity for living underwater. But yet, that is exactly what philosophers do when they condemn life for changing, because that is the very nature of what it is.
Yeah. Wow.
So, I would say, and that has that essay, if I ever have a friend who's going through something, I'll be like, hey, there's a PDF of Cloud Castles they should read. Because it talks about the passage of time and coming to acceptance that life is this thing that is
so finite.
Finite, perpetually changing. And so maybe what it is maybe we are inhabitants of cloud castles. And that said, what I'd really like to do now is, can we do a drop-in of one of the songs?
Sure.
So people can actually hear that, and then we'll come back and do the bottom five and wrap this up and go find my wife and my dog.
Okay.
We're probably lost somewhere. So of the nine, which one are we going to hear? It's your choice.
Are we picking one out of the nine?
We're picking one out of the nine because we are at 59 minutes.
Well, why don't we just pick for this? You mean for this block?
There's
going to be one for the next one.
No, this is it.
One.
This is
one
an hour-long podcast. We're over time.
Oh, jeez, I had no idea.
You got to pick one.
Oh, how about Wow, this is, you put me on the spot here. That's
sorry.
So
well, do
unfair.
You need to look at the list?
No, I know what they are. Damn it.
Go on, listen to that. We're not going to keep people here for... We did this at the pace we're going. This would be an 11-hour podcast.
That's all right.
And, you know, people got to get to work. People
no,
got
to
do stuff.
I know. You need to sit home and take off work and listen to us postulate about these things.
Yeah.
How about ice cream party?
Ice cream party. Tell us about ice cream party.
Ice cream party is kind of a awakening. Well, no. How do I put this? I was coming back from being in Ohio, and I had a gig to get to that same day. So I was on vacation with a friend. We either went to a concert, I think it might have been Kiss, I don't know, like 2000-ish. No, it was after that. It was like mid-2000s. But anyways, I was coming back from Ohio, and I went through Ligonier for some reason. Like, I took 30 to go through Ligonier to get back to Westmont, which is where, actually, you know, Johnstown was where the gig was. And I have these roots in Ligonier. My mom and I used to go to this Dairy Queen. They called it the Gay 90s because it was like this themed, like the 1890s sort of, sort of Dairy Queen thing. You know, it was all period specific and all that kind of thing, as best as they could. But I thought it was neat. I thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
So the building was still there. It's no longer there. It's like a YMCA or something now. Yeah, more fuel on the fire with the Mankind thing. But anyways, so I am going through Ligonier, and I just had this sort of vision, not really driving literally past the Gay 90s building like the Dairy Queen, but another building, and Led Zeppelin's Bronyar was playing, I think, from Physical Graffiti, and it's this really ethereal, like, two-minute instrumental guitar piece that's really beautiful, and it's kind of wistful and sad. And so I'm driving past this building, and for some reason I had this vision of my mom, my dad, my brother, who's actually my half-brother, but I don't call him that, his dad, who is the reason I really play guitar, because my mom and him lived for a time before my brother was born, and I was in the house still too. And I just had a vision of, like, my family, quote-unquote, like the impossible situation of this actually happening at some point. And it just, I kind of made a correlation between that and the feeling one gets when one thinks about when one is going to die, but then they think back to when they were little and had birthday parties. And it's like, it's so sad when you think about it because of, you know, you're going to die, but yet you were this five-year-old that had like life by the balls, and that's really the horrible way to say it. unless you're Scarface.
Well, there goes the poignant moment.
We're back. But no, it was the type of vibe where I think about that. I think about that often. Where, like, how sad is it that we're going to die, and yet we used to be the center of the birthday party, and all our friends were there, and all these presents, and how wonderful it was. So it was kind of like a combination of that. It was like sort of like a birthday party type thing with all my family. You know, like, I've had sort of a disjointed family, and it was kind of everybody there, and just how idyllic that would be. And it was almost kind of like a heaven scene, like if we had all died and we were in heaven having a party. Yeah. So that's
all right, let's check that out.
Okay, then. Thank you.
All right. And so we're back.
All right.
So folks who want to hear more, untilthequasar.bandcamp.com, where you can stream this and other fun Until the Quasar releases. No conflict of interest again. For folks, also, you can also get a physical copy of this at one of John's shows. And how do folks find out about your shows, John?
Oh, well, primarily, they can't, because I don't have a website.
You should do something
like
that.
I know, man. Well, currently, it's like a lot of Facebook-driven, you know, that kind of thing. I haven't started an artist page yet, though, so it's just basically my own Facebook.
You should start an artist page.
I know.
You should.
I just
so we can find out your shows and then go and buy cassettes, and it'll be great.
All right, well, maybe
that's what this is about,
hey,
really.
Hey, well, we talked before about, like, the situation of your RMS turning into better things. Maybe this will turn into an artist page for me into better things.
Yes, exactly. This will be a bigger platform, and you can leave shows making, you know, $5 more than you would have because you sold a tape.
I'm so bad
at
self-promotion.
And you made a human connection. Well, here it is.
I'm so
bad
at it.
It's going to happen, and you're going to make that human connection, so yes.
Other than the fact that I rule, I am so bad at self-promotion. So
yes.
Come see a show. There you
yes.
go.
And you can pick up, again, a copy of Far Away From Today, this album that asks an existential question, or at least is your clearing the decks of the past. And so you can own a piece of that, too. Again, untilthequasar.bandcamp.com and John's eventual artist page should be up by the time...
Such contemptuous
this
doubt.
This podcast is up.
Contempt
when
and
the
doubt.
Album comes out soon. Anyway.
Yeah.
And now it's time for the bottom five.
Okay.
Bottom five is
I'm
a series of questions that are not related to our main topic, though sometimes they actually are, that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. And John, are you ready?
I'm getting myself worked into it.
Okay. Well, actually, the first one is related to our main topic. And it's not even a question, it is a prompt. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood.
Oh, wow. One of the happy...
I think I might have hit you with this one before, but I didn't feel like looking in the old files.
There were these two older girls that really liked me when I was probably like 6 or 7 years old. And let your imagination run where it will at this point.
Okay. Question two. Name a film world you would like to visit or live in permanently.
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Want to live in the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, should I explain that?
I don't think so.
I really like tornadoes.
Okay, like tornadoes.
And that's it.
Okay.
Emerald City's cool. Love that movie.
Yeah.
Go. Next.
Nope. Next. What's the strangest item you have eaten and or found in your stool?
Eaten from my stool?
Or eaten, or found in your stool. Like, you could have, like, there could have been a button in there, and you've been like, what the fuck? Or, you know,
what?
You know, or muskrat. Did you ever, you know?
Ooh, jeez. I don't know if I've ever eaten anything unusual. Wow. I think I might have at some point in Florida or the Bahamas eaten something really weird. But I can't remember what it was. So there you go.
Okay. You
what about
something?
You? This is just about me, but I want to
ask
you.
No, this
you.
Is about you.
I want to know what you've eaten. Like, what's weird that you've eaten?
Irish moss, the soft drink. The Jamaican soft drink, Irish moss.
And it's actually Irish moss?
The aftertaste is moss.
Oh, God.
It's Yoo-hoo with chunky bits of vanilla with a mossy aftertaste. It's one of the few things I've eaten I can say I've ever tapped out on.
Okay, well, then I know what I've had that really sucks. Well, not I guess sucks isn't what we're asking.
No.
Well, the reaction, at least, is kind of 1B, okay? I once won a six-pack of Old German at a church festival.
what a church.
And yeah, and me and my buddy, we went back to these rocks or wherever you go to drink beer when you're underage and whatnot, and...
You want beer underage at a church festival.
Yeah.
Was it a satanic church?
No. Oh. It was a German satanic church. But no, so I took one drink of this beer and turned around and threw it. Like, one drink, bam. Worst thing I've ever had in my entire life. And that qualifies as unusual.
Yes.
So Old German beer, do not drink.
local delight that it is. All right, question four. Okay, if we were living in a dystopian future, and the only books to survive would be those bound in human skin, would you sacrifice your skin so that this book could live into the future? So we're almost still back on the main topic. Would you, and what book would you choose?
You mean after I die, would I donate my skin?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm thinking more like this book, they're burning all the books. The books will not survive unless you march yourself into the tannery. This book, future generation will not have access to it. You have to make that choice.
But I die as a result, you're saying?
Yeah. But the book gets to live.
I don't know if I could. I don't know, man. But if I would, I would probably choose something by Shakespeare.
Yeah, you know, and you think somebody got to Shakespeare, though.
But something more fringy.
Yeah.
Well.
You can't say the Bible or the Quran either. Somebody already did those, too. Bible, Quran, Shakespeare, somebody did those.
I really wasn't going to say those. Anything by Mr. Rogers.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
That's what I would do.
And final question. If there is a hell and you end up there, name one celebrity that you expect / hope to meet there.
Gene Simmons.
All right. On that happy note, I think it's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and hey, it'll be about something, or we'll take another 6-month hiatus. Who knows? Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes, Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, and new and some classic episodes will be available on Mixcloud. Search for us on all of those platforms, or really, I guess you just only need one. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook, because we do have an artist page, damn it.
Uh-huh.
Thanks to our guest, John
Charney.
Well,
you know who else has an artist page is Gene Simmons.
There you go.
And he's stepped in here for John, and we're going to take over this podcast. This is Gene Simmons of Kiss. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Later, mates.